Hello, everybody. Stu Smith, Jeff Nichols here with the Tactical Fitness Report. And today we're going to break down the PST. And we are really going to talk about all the different types of people that take the PST, you know, all types of shapes and sizes, as well as performance abilities, good and bad. And some things, you know, maybe have, you know, go through a couple different scenarios with that. But, you know, and try to come up with some good answers. But before we get into that, this next week, both Jeff and I, and I mean, there's going to be, 100 plus speakers at the event in Norfolk, the Tactical Strength and Conditioning Conference, or they call it annual training. I guess they can't call it the conference anymore.
Because they're not allowed to send people to conferences. And it's just
silly. Yeah, I know. It's just such a stupid silliness. Thing. So instead of a conference, they call it annual training. But it's done by the National Strength and Conditioning Association. I'll put a link to the event down below, because if you can't make it in person, I think they are streaming all of the videos.
Correct. And that's why someone asked me, probably you, is like, hey, are Jeff or you and Stu going to film your, technically, because we are paid speakers or invited speakers or however they're classifying us. They own the intellectual information.
Yeah. So they will be streaming it.
Yes.
But I mean, there's nothing wrong with Jeff and I talking about the same thing. I'm pretty much, if you combine about four or five of our podcasts previously, that's what we're talking about. You know, right. We're talking about tactical fitness and the three phases of tactical fitness and a lot of the mistakes and where people screw up on making programs for tactical athletes.
Correct. So, correct.
But anyway, yeah, but there's some really sharp people there. I mean, the guy that invented tactical fitness will be there. I mean, yep. Which is really cool. So anyway, let's talk about this PST. So as we all know, the PST, and you can put any, you know, physical fitness test for that matter into this category, but today we're just going to break down the swim, the push-up, the sit-up, the pull-up, and the mile-and-a-half run that is done by, you know, the Navy side of the house. There's the, you know, Air Force PJs have a past test that's very similar, just different order, you know, all the same events, just different order.
Right. These things will still apply, because like the Army is a 2 mile run.
Yeah.
Marine Corps OCS is a 5. So these parameters that we're going to talk about will still apply. The general ones, you start getting some deeper selection courses where you're going to run 10, 15 miles, a little bit different animal, but when you get to that point, you won't have to worry about it. These are just entry selection.
Right. This is to get to the training.
Yep.
Right. Well, once again, it is a phase of tactical fitness. So you have to master this fitness test if you don't, you know, if you want to get to the training. And unfortunately, I tell people all the time, don't even go to the recruiter until you can ace this fitness test. Because what's going to happen is you're going to take this test, you're going to fail it, you're going to be in the failing zone, and you're going to be wondering why the recruiter's not getting back to you. Mm-hmm. You know, because he's dealing with people who passed it. You know, he's trying to get them out of here, right, and to training. So just do yourself a favor. Be ready to pass it on day one when you get there. Hey, real quick, we have the ultimate fast story for getting to boot camp, right? One of my guys, and he listened to me. He was an 18-year-old kid, and he was torqued whenever I said, you know what? You're 18 years old. You just finished high school. You're a great guy. Finish college first. Just go to college. Because I knew his parents wanted him to go to college. He got a couple ROTC scholarships, but he turned them down because he wanted to enlist and be a Navy SEAL. I'm like, all right, dude, let's do this. And so he worked himself through college, had a part-time job, you know, took some extra courses on EMT and, you know, scuba diving, and just really did really well. And he graduated college in 3.5 years. I mean, kicked ass.
Crushed
I mean,
it.
That's awesome. So now he went to the recruiter like 3 weeks ago for the first time. 2 days later, he was already through MEPS, right? Sometimes that's a huge pain in the neck. I mean, he's never had any surgeries, never had any trouble, never had any issues. Boom, through MEPS in the first week, which I've got guys still waiting months to get through MEPS because they got waivers to deal with and all that stuff. And they just offered him today, said, hey, man, you can leave April 5th if you want to leave. One month. And he asked me, I said, man, I think you're ready.
Yeah.
You know, you've been doing this for 3.5 years. You are ready to go.
Yeah.
You know, So that was a kind of exciting journey. You know, every now and then you hear a great story about somebody. And you know what? He went to the PST his first time. Auto qual level scores, you know, just crushed everything. So that, yep, that enabled that door to open for him so quickly. So that's why we say be patient, and it'll pay off. So
it will. That probably reminds me kind of me, but I took that. I was waiting for my sister to get married. Same idea. Maybe that's just something we haven't talked about. Like, why go to college? Well, what a great opportunity to mature physically and prepare and then get your education all at the same time. Yeah. And, you know, you can find out a lot about yourself otherwise. So,
yeah. And if you know what, if you don't know what you want to do in college, go to junior college and take an EMT course. Start there, you know, because you're going to be having EMT level courses when you go through training, you know, and learn how to stop blood and TCCC and, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, it's just smart. You know, it's just smart. And you're just going to be, you know, take a scuba course. You know, some junior colleges give you college credit for taking a scuba course. You know, how cool is that?
Yeah, there was a – oh, that's what you were talking about, like when you were a midshipman, like your summer trip, you guys like took the boat all the way down to New Orleans?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was the best.
That was crazy.
Yeah, that was a journey. all right. So let's break this PST down. So pretty much Jeff and I have taken the swim, the pull-up, the push-up, the sit-up, mile and a half, and pretty much said, here's the deal. You're either going to be fast or slow at the run or the swim, or both, or one or the other. You're going to be good or not good at pull-up, push-ups, or sit-ups, or some, or the other, or maybe not one or the other. So, you know, there's this massive, if we were to make a flow chart of like all the different combinations of people being good and bad at these things, it'd be almost infinite. Amount of different combinations that you could have. Not quite. There's obviously.
I think the math is what, 5 × 4 × 3 × 2?
Yeah, there you go.
That's the math is whatever that comes out to be.
Yep.
So 20 × 3, so 60 × 2, 120 different options.
Yeah, there's 120 different things. So instead of just saying we're picking one or we're just going to go through all 120, we're going to just discuss, you know, what to do when one or the other is occurring. All right. So Jeff, you take it. Let's start off with the swim first.
Yeah. So again, what Stu is saying, we're not going to attest absolute times to it, but let's say that typically you're going to get a lot of people that swim around at 10:30, right? Somewhere around that's like, it's not super slow, but it's not very efficient. You might have a guy that's going to swim a sub 8, let's call a sub like an 8 or a 10, above it, somewhere around a 10. So what does that mean? Cause a lot of people send Stu and I, hey, here's my PST scores. What do you think? And so we have to look at PST numbers without real assessment of person's movement patterns and come to a conclusion. So if someone gives me a score of a 10:30 on their swim, well, that's the 10:30 is a result of really one of three things, kind of, like by majority. They need better aerobic conditioning, could be a reason why they're that slow. Typically, it's they're inefficient in the water, right? They just haven't developed that quality stroke yet, so they got so much drag, right? And then kind of you look at the other thing is like, this is still kind of technique driven, but a lot of people are pull dominant. So they poop out, right? So they don't have the muscular endurance because they're not efficient. So it's kind of 2-in-1 there. So
that's a really good point, because I've seen some guys that are really muscularly in shape. So like a wrestler, for instance, I've seen wrestlers muscle through the swim before.
Their lats are just,
I mean, and they just beat the water up
for,
you know, less than 10 minutes. I've seen the guy swim 9 minutes, but they do it in like 15 strokes.
Yeah.
Whereas the guy next to him is doing it in 5 or 6 strokes per length. And, you know, so it's, you can sometimes look at these scores and you say, wow, he swam pretty well, but man, his PT score sucked.
Yeah.
But wait a second. He's a wrestler. That shouldn't happen.
And he's crushing the pull-ups and other things too. So that's when we look at numbers. That's what we see. We say, well, okay. Cause a lot of people will say, and the reason why we're bringing this up is for this reason. Most people will go, man, I got a 10:30. My aerobic conditioning is crap. It may not be. right? It might be, but then that's where you go. You look at someone, you're not, the likelihood of you swimming a sub eight, those parameters all have to be present. That's why we can, it's a process of elimination. If you're swimming an eight or sub eight, you know you have good aerobic conditioning, you know you're efficient in the water, and you know you were relying on your kick.
Yeah.
So one of those three things, two of those three things, or all three of things are missing if you're swimming a 10.
Yeah, or 10 plus.
Or 10 plus or whatever it may be, yeah. Right? So when you look at your own PST scores, that's what you guys got to be thinking. And that's my input on the swim.
All right. So let's do this though. I have seen guys with great cardiovascular endurance, like a runner, right? And then they jump into the pool and just get exhausted in the pool. You know, they have great cardio conditioning and they have decent technique, but maybe their cardiovascular conditioning is not quite used to the swim version of that, where right. You say, you know, pull dominant when they should probably be a little more leg and kick dominant, especially as a runner.
Right. And that's the thing, is because a lot of runners, distance runners, are actually pretty quad dominant. That's why they have no butt. So when you're talking about being a very efficient swimmer with your feet behind you and using that as your source of propulsion primarily, you really need to be hamstring and glute dominant primarily into the hamstrings and a really good posterior lumbar strength to get that lat, get the iliacus and psoas under tension so you can push your way through. So that's a lot of times, like we were saying, Stu, is you see a guy that can run like the wind but sinks like a rock in the pool. Yeah. And it's not because a lot of those guys that get in the water go, I just got to swim harder. No, you got to swim more efficient. And sometimes it's like, no, you need to really learn to rely more on your kick.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good. Cause you know, they have the cardiovascular conditioning. It's obvious, you know, maybe it's a technique issue. Maybe it's just a little bit of swimming conditioning too. Cause it is different. You know, I've done triathlons and, you know, could crush the swim, get on a bike, do really well, but then the run kills me. You know, it's just, you know,
there's a reason why triathlons start in the water.
Yeah.
If they didn't, it'd be extremely dangerous.
Yeah. That's a good point.
This is not a fish story, but I know that there was a triathlon. I think it was in California. It was like the Alcatraz triathlon or something like that. The way they did it backwards. They ended with a swim once.
That's a lot of cramping.
But to get there, you had to be like there. It wasn't like an open triathlon. You had to qualify for it.
Yeah.
Just like you do Kona.
Right. Gotcha.
But that was a lot of times you see like here, the Alan Stone Memorial Run during the SEAL Memorial. It's a run, swim, run.
Right. Yeah. I love those.
Yeah. So yeah. All right, Stu, what about again, we'll kind of go to same thing. Like I want you to break down the runner. Like someone's really slow, really, because it's, again, the same sort of questions you guys got to ask yourself about your run times.
You know what? There's also, I think, another level of this with the run and the swim that I didn't mention is strategy, too. Because a lot of people will start out flat out running hard or swimming hard, whereas all they really need to do is just muscle memory a pace. You know, so that a pace that they can maintain for 500 yards or a pace that they can maintain for a mile and a half versus going out real hard the first two laps.
Right.
You know, or the first lap, because I've seen many people, you know, one day, you know, do a, you know, a 40 second 50, you know, in the swim, or maybe run a 70 second quarter mile, you know, when they're, you know, really all they needed was a 90 second to get a mile and a half and under 9 minutes. So I think strategy is also another area. Well, I will agreed. Look at it, you know,
especially in the sit up.
Yeah. That's
well, all of them. I mean, yeah. Only one you're not going to pace yourself probably is the pull up.
Yeah. Because gravity will pull you just, it away from you. Yeah.
It's just really, you can kind of pace yourself potentially in the push up.
Yeah.
Rhythmically.
Yeah.
The sit up for me is all rhythm.
Yeah.
The swim, rhythm. I agree, is, well, the thing I say about the swim for guys is You can postulate. You should be able to, because you've done 500 meter swims multiple times, hopefully prior to your first actual PST. You got to remember how often and frequently you're breathing at the end. Start breathing like that.
Yeah.
At the beginning, so you can really charge through the first 300 as opposed to a constant decrement.
Yeah. Because
a lot of people, we get out of the gate and you're like, "Ooh, I'm cruising," right? And you're like, "Oh crap, I forgot to breathe."
Yeah.
You know, by that point, it's just so keep that in mind too. You know, we don't really run into that issue quite so much with a run because you can breathe all the time. But
yeah. The only time I see it on the run is just people are not pacing correctly. So if, you know, like if you're trying to get a 9 minute mile and a half, you need a 90 second quarter mile, you need a 3 minute half mile, you need a 6 minute mile.
Yep. And
those are the little tick marks that you need to be on in order to make that time.
Yep.
And your training you need to play around with that time. You know, at least once a week, play around with a goal pace run. The other ones can be a mix of intervals and speed and, you know, work on your anaerobic thresholds and all that stuff. But you need to muscle memory the pace, you know, as well. So I usually say that is a big issue, you know, strategy as well as, you know, if they're too fast or if they're not fast enough on the run. And, you know, by the time you get to the run, you know, you have burned up a lot of sugar, right? You've burned up a lot of your glycogen in your body, you know, to get through the swim as fast as you can, to get through the PT section. And, you know, it's not a bad idea to have some, you know, some carbohydrates, you know, throughout this test. You don't need to chug a whole Gatorade or anything, but a few sips here and there can go a long way with just having a little bit extra kick on that last lap of the mile and a half.
Yeah.
So
yeah, definitely. I mean, consuming some peanut butter, 20, 30, like a bunch of like a 2 tablespoons of peanut butter or MCT oil, something fat, like something fairly fatty, but not like, you know, not a chicken leg. I'm something that's a little bit more dense and readily available source of energy, right? Some honey and some peanut butter and some Gatorade, some of those things like 30 minutes out, it'll go a long way for you. You know, and that's why we stress the importance so much on using a heart rate monitor or knowing your splits is very valuable, because then you just, then you can see where you had diminishing return. So let's say you go out and run your mile and a half and you're cruising, your 400 is good, your 800, right? And all of a sudden it just starts petering off. Well, now you know where you're getting diminished return. And so that's where you always train up to and improve that, because you can't improve a mile and a half until you've established a good half mile and three quarter mile and mile. So that's why the idea of just, if my mile and a half is poo, but I go out and run a 4 miles, but I'm already in diminished return at a mile, and my each mile split gets slower and slower and slower.
Right.
We really didn't improve the mile and a half as much as we could have, which is why intervals and hills and all those sort of things are valuable in conjunction with longer runs.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one great tool I use is just the smartphone stopwatch, because I don't know if you can see that, but you know, you got lap one, lap two, lap three, you know, and if you have somebody just, you know, keeping track of your laps in a pool, you know, it'll tell you right there, you know, where you fell off your 50 second per 50 yard pace. Yep. If you want an 8:20, I tend to make 8:20 my minimum standard. So that is a yard per second. That's 500 yards, 500 seconds. It's real easy math. If you're doing 100 yards, you got to do 100 seconds. 200 yards, 200 seconds.
I think there's an app, too, that you can basically have a running split with the video.
Yeah, that's cool.
You can film somebody so you can actually see you getting slower. Like, hey, your turn was crap there. You just lost. You know what I mean? So there are those apps available, too.
Yeah. Yeah. You had to hold on to the wall and double breathe and you know, where you're losing seconds. And I mean, just having a buddy film you do any of these events is a really good way to kind of self-assess, like, oh, that's where I screwed up. And this is where I need to start working on my training, instead of doing, you know, a whole bunch of 50s where I'm doing real well at 50 and 100, maybe, and I start falling off at 250, 300. Now you need to pull in, you know, make your workout sets a little bigger. So you're doing, 250, 300 yard sets, in swimming, same way with running. If you're nailing 10 quarter miles at your goal pace, but you still can't hit a mile and a half at your goal pace, now let's try to make it 5 half mile repeat that you're doing. And, so at that goal pace, right. And just try to extend it that way. So you can actually, learn the pace at now a longer distance.
Yep. So we've definitely talked a lot about the running and swim, and it's just your times are indicators of a couple different variables. There are much less variables when it comes to the push-up, the pull-up, and the sit-ups now.
Yeah.
Typically, it's probably going to be – it's a strength issue, right, really in terms of the pull-up. Right, if you only do 3 pull-ups, that's clearly a strength issue, right? If you are at 12, 14 and want to get to 20, that's more of a combination of strength and strength endurance issue. And that's just gravity is just going to be a pain in the butt always.
It's another level too.
I mean,
it's another level of training.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's my take on the pull-up. How about you?
Yeah, I am a big fan of using especially if you're getting started, and let's say you're single digits in pull-ups, right? I assess a couple of things. How much do you weigh, right? Do you need to lose weight? Because one, that's going to be easier for you to do pull-ups if you need to drop 30 pounds, right? That's going to be a lot easier. Two, we create a program for you where you're doing pull-ups every other day, right? Where you can do maybe a pyramid one day. See how high you can get up a 1, 2, 3, 4, kind of a ladder pyramid back down the other side. And the reason why I like that test at least once a week is that it's a great assessment tool as well. Because one day you can only get to 5 and back down to 1, but the next time you do it, you're up to 6 or 7,
right?
Next thing you get up to 10, back down to 1. And the cool thing about the pyramid, it's easy math. All you got to do is square the top number and you got your total count. So you get 1 to 10, back to 1, that's 100 pull-ups. That's a good volume for what you are trying to do with this PST, right? As a daily workout. And then give yourself 48 hours before you do pull-ups again, or longer even if you wanted to, if you feel sore from it. I usually do like a sub-max set of PT on the second workout of the week. So maybe a superset style thing where I'm 5 to 10 sets of 10 pull-ups, 20 push-ups, 30 sit-ups, right? Just kind of work through that volume a little bit, build my volume a little bit differently. But then the third workout, I usually give myself a couple of days. So maybe like a Monday, Wednesday, and a Saturday. On Saturday, I've given myself another day's rest in between. And then I try a max rep set, pull-up, push-up, sit-up routine where I try to get 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, and 300 sit-ups in as few sets as possible, on like a 1 minute or 2 minute time, the limit for the push-ups and the sit-ups. So I'm working my pace. I'm pushing myself to where I'm borderline failing, maybe even failing, right? Falling off the bar, and then maybe try one or two more, maybe try a reverse grip one or two more, just to try to push over that ledge. And there's a lot of science out there, and there's a lot of people that say you shouldn't be failing. And I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying that, failing once or twice in a workout is not going to kill you. If you're failing every single freaking set, three workouts a week, yes, I can see where that logic makes sense. You shouldn't be failing like that.
You've already answered it perfectly. And let me highlight what you said. So failure is fine, but you've already said, it's about pacing, right? That's where they come together quite well. If you're failing just because you're too heavy, not strong enough, or you're coming out of the gate too hot, sometimes just go, hey, man, just slow down, pace yourself. And then that failure becomes something where you're like, oh, it's a clear indicator then of need more strength, need to lose weight. Because if it's too undulating of why you're failing, because you're not managing rest periods or rhythm or all these sort of things, slow down. Find your pace. Find something that in your head, you got your own little running metronome. So pace will work well with failure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very good point. I like that. But when we're doing the push-ups, the sit-ups, and the pull-ups, you know, you got to practice those. I mean, that's all there is to it. But where people screw up, and I get these emails all the time, I even written a couple articles about don't do daily push-ups, right? Don't, you know, don't do, I do have a program out there that's like a 10-day, you push your push-ups, you know, it, almost like a little 10-day overload principle where you actually do push-ups every day for 10 days and you take 3 days off and then you test on day 14. And depending on where you are on your push-up level, you can really do well. I've seen guys almost double their push-ups, you know, depending on what they started. But if you're starting at 75, you know, you're not going to double your push-ups in 2 weeks, you know, to get to one. So
let me be the devil's advocate, Stu, because just like you, people are like, but Stu, you do push-ups every single day at Buds. And my response is, yes, Buds is not a fitness program. It's a selection course.
Yes, thank you.
So keep that in mind. Yes, like, You do push-ups more than you're supposed to every single day at Buds because they are trying to make it. You're going to do so many push-ups at Buds, you won't be able to do them all.
Yeah, and you will just quit counting them.
Yeah, you'll just kind of go along with everyone else, but like, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, it's one of those exercises where you just get – you hear the word drop, and you just start doing push-ups.
Yeah, 1, right? 7, 14, 22. Yep, oh, yeah.
You know, and it's, I mean,
there is a cat and mouse that goes on at Buds that everyone plays, that everyone knows about, and you think as a young Buds student, nobody's paying attention, but they know what's going on. So understand that, like, and again, it's like, you know, trying to create programming based off of those sort of parameters, you know, there's an aspect of it. But what we're really trying to do is create programming to yield the greatest adaptation based off of what we know in a given timeline, that year, year and a half, or 3 years that Stu and I are talking about. Well, we're working to this goal down here. We're not working to like the now, the day by day stuff. We're trying to get to the year 2, 3, 4 years down the line.
Right.
That's what we're working towards.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, you got to do these. And one of the things, like I said, you don't need to do 500 push-ups a day to get better at push-ups. In fact, that will not get you better at push-ups. You know, you might get good at it for a month or two, maybe. Right? But after that,
neurological, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to see diminishing returns real quick. You're going to see injuries, you know, tendonitis in your elbows, tendonitis in your shoulders. Your wrists may hurt. You know, all those little things.
Here's the catch 22 to that too, is let's say you are doing push-ups and pull-ups and sit-ups every day, and then you get a diminishing return. Well, the answer is you got to take some time off and then create diversified training. But now you're already sore and you got tendonitis, and you should be doing resistance training, but you can't because it hurts.
Yeah.
So you're really kind of that point where, like, you've just put both feet in the grave, a shallow grave, we'll say. Excuse me for the silly metaphor, but calisthenics are really valuable if utilized to their strengths. And that's so, like, what I like to do calisthenic-wise, push-ups, pull-ups, I cluster stuff. I go, and I know you do too, it's like, hey, here's my resistance program. Today I'm going to do some primarily a posterior pull. Well, after every set, I want you to do 2 pull-ups. But in that set, you're like, well, 2 pull-ups. Yeah, but the total training day is like 37 sets.
Right, right.
You just did 74 pull-ups in 90 minutes. And you're like, well, yeah, but I'm doing 2s. It matters. Because, again, training is a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay?
And that's what I was saying. We want to train to success. We're not having doing max pull-ups after each set. We're trying to accumulate a volume that you can adapt to.
Right. And, you know, some of your prior knowledge of training might be bodybuilding. It might be powerlifting. You know, sometimes those methods aren't best suited for what we're trying to do with calisthenics. They're great for building strength. They're great for building muscle mass, right? But, you know, you're kind of not in that zone right now. You know, you're taking a strength exercise, which is basically what a pull-up is, and a push-up is a strength exercise, but you're turning it into an endurance exercise.
Yes.
Right. So to do that, you know, requires you know, an increase of volume to a point where you're increasing your work capacity to be able to handle these for 2 minute sets.
Yeah.
That's all we're really asking you to do.
Yeah.
So the goal is try to handle these at 2 minute sets, you know, without having to fail at a minute or a minute and a half and have to go to your knees on push-ups, or you can't get off the ground from sit-ups. So, right. You know, all this once again takes time and practice and goal pacing, especially for sit. I wrap sit-ups, swim, and running all into same type of exercises as a goal pace exercise. Because I have seen people fail sit-ups at the Naval Academy on a Monday, right? And I watched them, and they did like 40 sit-ups in 30 seconds. And then in the next minute and a half, they couldn't match that to get 80. So what's that tell you? They just started off way too fast. And then I ran the remedial program. I'd see them the next day, and I say, okay, here's what I want you to do today. Don't start off so fast. Let's do 20 in 30 seconds, mm-hmm. right? And do 40 in 1 minute, 60, 130. And sure enough, you know, they go from barely making 60 on day one, and on day two, they're at 80, right? Or 80 plus.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't make them stronger, just made them a little smarter.
And the reason why, here's the physiology why the sit-up, people fail the sit-up more than any other two, push-up, pull-up, and this is why.
Absolutely.
Because when you're in this, as soon as you go into hip flexion, it is now a hip flexor dominant exercise, not an ab. The ab is stabilized, the hip flexor is in locomotion. And when you come up, not the issue, but you throw yourself down dynamically and the hip flexors are going to dynamically decelerate. You're landing. And yeah. Now you're going to change direction and you got to can't sit up. So if you just slow it down, you take the dynamic aspect out of it, you're like, wait a minute. And you never slow down. And then you're like 20 seconds left. You're like, bam, 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 knockout. And like, so typically I have guys set the metronome up, little metronome app. Guys can't do 40, can't do 50. I'm like, slow down, do this. And they're like, I did 92 today.
Yeah.
Yes, you did.
Absolutely. It's all, like I said, getting a little smarter, not getting stronger.
Yep. Because you'll see everyone to come out of the gate just smoking fast. And most people in the sit-ups don't even get to 2 minutes. Well, you'll be accelerating because you know in your head, you're like, I'm at 45, I'm the halfway point.
Yep.
I'm at 60, I'm at minute 20.
Yeah, right, and at 70. Yeah, at 130, you got, okay, I got 30 seconds. Yep. I can pick up the pace now.
And you don't burn yourself out.
Right.
You're going to just know this. You're going to have the buzz instructors in your ears going, hurry up, stupid, hurry up, stupid. It's part of the game. But you're going to be the one at the end going, yeah, I got 137.
Yeah, you got a muscle. You got a muscle memory of the pace.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's the key. Now, here's something I've done, and I call it my PST clinic, where I take – if I'm going to watch a kid do the PST and really critique it, I break it down into multiple sets. So when I watch him swim the 500, I'm not looking at a 500-yard swim. I'm looking at 10 50-yard swims and the times associated with each one of those 50-yard swims. For push-ups, I'm looking at the same thing. I'm looking at how many you got in the first minute, how many you got in the second minute, right? Was there a pacing thing going on there? Did you just start off too slow? Are you not letting gravity take you down? Are you using energy to drop? You know, what's wrong with your pace there? Yep. Sit-ups, same thing. I break it down into three 30-seconds or four 30-second sets. You know, where were you in the first 30 seconds? Second, you know, 1 minute mark, minute and a half, boom. Pull-ups. That's pretty much just get it done, and you want to get it done quickly. You don't want to hang on that bar too much because every time you hang there, gravity's just slowly taking your pull-ups away. This is just my recommendations. You know, it's my observations that I've seen that, you know, anybody who's doing slow pull-ups are, you know, taking pull-ups away from themselves, if you ask me. I mean, but you got to do it in good form.
Yeah. Folks, these are tests. Tests have parameters that can be trained.
Yes.
Each one of these exercises has different components, right? You're not in a 500 meter straight line swim. There are turns involved. There's breathing involved. There's technique involved. The run, all these sort of things. You're on a track. There's pacing. There's push-ups. It's multi-directional. There's all of these things that can be independently trained. And when you train them all independently, just like you do in any other sport, like baseball, you know, weight comes back, hands inside the ball, finish, all these sort of things. Each one of those components of a swing can be trained independently, depending on where your weakness is. Because you might say, I'm a weak swimmer. And we go, no, you are going to be a great swimmer once you learn this little piece. Like, oh, I can't do the pull. I can't do the sit-up. No, pace yourself because you're a big, heavy guy, and sit-ups don't like big, heavy guys because you've got a big barrel chest.
Right.
So each component of each one of these, or each one of these tests has multiple components that can be trained. And from a muscle action, you have concentric, eccentric, and you have isometrics. That outside of the exercise, you have three muscle actions to train. Dissect it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. And then my last thing of the PST is the run, where instead of looking at a mile and a half run, I look at six quarters.
Yep.
Where you are on each one of those quarters. Because what a 10-minute run tells me is, you know, how were you on your first quarter? You know, yep. Were you on pace? You know, were you on pace your second quarter? Where'd you fall off pace? You know, did you start off too fast? Did you start off too slow? You know, what are these things that we can fix, both on a training standpoint as well as a strategy standpoint, for you to do better on this PST?
Yeah, there's the movie Prefontaine.
Oh, great.
Where Bill Bowerman is breaking down Prefontaine's. I think this is called because there's two Steve Prefontaine movies, but the one that's actually called Prefontaine.
Right.
It shows Bill Bowerman, who's played by Arlie Ermey, or no, it's the other guy. That's the other one. So. But it shows Bill Bowerman writing the splits down for his Olympic pace. And you'll see how those splits work. It's like, wait a minute. Cause he's arguing with Coach Bowerman. He goes, but I come out of the gate hot. And Bowerman's like, if you do, that Finnish guy is going to smoke you. Right. And then you see it. And Pre's like, he does, he slows down and he gets faster and faster and faster in that mile and a half, 2 mile. And it just, that's the approach, folks. It's like, you're not a pussy for sitting back and pacing yourself.
No, it's part of the strategy. And yeah. You know what? Everybody talks about the PST as this is 110% effort, right? You got 100% effort that you have to put into this thing. And, you know, you don't score, you don't strive for the minimum standards. You just go as hard as you can. Well, yeah, that doesn't mean you're going to start your first lap on a mile and a half sprinting. You know, yeah. There's no need to do a quarter mile in 60 seconds.
Because they're not going to go,
yeah,
man, you failed. But your first three quarters of a mile, man, you were smoking fast. They only care about the final number.
Yeah.
Right? And,
you know, if same with swimming. You know, if you are starting your swim and you feel like, you know, everybody's in front of you because they're not on their pace, that's a tough one to kind of swallow and say, all right, you just got to trust your pace, you know, because guess what's going to happen about 300, you know, about the 300 mark, you're going to be lapping all those dudes.
Their head's going to be out of the water, huffing and puffing, holding on to the rail or holding on to the gutter.
Same with the run. I see the run all the time. I know my pace. I've been doing my pace for years.
Yep.
Kids just take off.
Yep.
75 second quarter, right? Yep. I'm hovering around 85, 90 second quarter. If I want a 9-minute run or break 9 minutes, you know, they're 10 seconds ahead of me, 15 seconds ahead of me. First lap. By lap three, I'm lapping them.
Part of being a good athlete, a good team leader, a good teammate is creativity. Mm. All right. This is all part of it. It's problem solving 101, starting at before you even get in.
Yeah.
This is a great problem for you to solve.
That's a really good point. That's a great way to frame what the PST actually is. Because, I mean, face it, I mean, you're going to do this thing multiple times to get to the training. And then once you get to the training, you're going to do it once or twice in the beginning of the first week or two, and you'll never do it again.
No.
You know, you're never going to do it. You got other tests you got to worry about. So once you master this, then you got to start thinking about how you're going to get through the training and start crushing 4-mile timed runs and 2-mile swims and obstacle courses and log PTs and rucking and all
different,
that.
Different canvas, same paints.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
All right, Stu. It was awesome.
All right, man. Hey,
I'll see you in a couple days.
Yeah, absolutely. Once again, check out the National Strength and Conditioning Association's Tactical Strength and Conditioning Annual Training. It's on their website. And like I said, I don't know what it costs, but it's well worth it. if you haven't been to one, or maybe if you want to see some of the live streaming, it's good stuff. You'll pick up some really neat tips about training. So
fantastic.
There you go. Thanks, Jeff.
Always.